906 1320 KLWN. It is now time for the Lawrence Business Magazine show right here on 1320 KLWN. Here's your host, Anne Frame Herzog.
Thank you, John. Each week we have in-depth conversations to follow up and explore the people and businesses making a positive impact on Lawrence. Today, I'm pleased to have Eileen Holly. She's the Vice President of Operations for the Lawrence Chamber of Commerce. And thank you for joining us today, Eileen.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
And one of the things we're going to talk about with Eileen is the Valor Public Safety Awards, which is happening. They're having their second year this year. And then we're also going to talk a little bit about Eileen's work with NASA as its Director of External Communications and her work in crisis communications now with the state. But first, the Valor Awards. Let's talk about how these came about, because this is only the second year. I think it's a wonderful thing, but how did this come about, the Valor Awards, and what is the mission of the Valor Awards?
This is a program that is just so close to my heart and is such a neat thing because it gives our community a chance to recognize the first responders who work every day to protect us. And the way this came around is Harry Harrington, who's the CEO of NIC Inc., and Tom Kern, who was our chamber president, got together and co-founded this program. And Harry is a former law enforcement officer. It was really important to him to do something that allowed us to recognize as a community what our first responders do. There's a lot of peer-to-peer recognition programs for police and firefighters and sheriffs, but the difference in this one is that it is from the community. And so we started it last year. We had our first ceremony in October of last year and had 14 honorees.
I know. I got a list of them. We'll have to talk about some of these guys.
That's some of the events that they were involved in. So it really came about out of a desire to recognize the heroes who are with us every day, but more than that, to recognize their families, because you know, these men and women go to work every day, and you don't know that they're coming home at the end of the day. And that's a harsh reality of what they do for a living. But we wanted to recognize the sacrifices their family makes. So the real heart of the Valor program is that for all of our honorees, when their children begin to their post-secondary education, when they go to college or a junior college or an accredited technical school, we give them a one-time $1,000 educational stipend to help with the costs of education. And so that's one way the community can say thank you.
That is nice. That's as I just having that extra $1,000 can make so much difference when you're buying books and all that stuff for the first time. What about what groups are involved when you say first responders? Who is that?
It is the Lawrence Police Department, Douglas County Sheriff, Lawrence Douglas County Fire Medical, University of Kansas Office of Public Safety.
Okay.
And then within all of that, particularly with fire medical, are those rural fire departments. It includes the volunteer fire departments or the smaller police and fire agencies that are out in Eudora and Baldwin City. So it's throughout Douglas County, not just the city of Lawrence.
Oh, that's nice. So, and then when they get the, so then you take nominations from everybody. How, I know that you said that the nominations are going to be happening here soon because the next awards is in October. Correct?
October 16th will be the award ceremony. So on next Friday, we will be getting all of the nominations from police, fire, sheriff, and KU. They will bring forward their folks in their offices who have done, we have a variety of awards. And so there's a Lifesaver Award. There's a Meritorious Service Award. We have gold, silver, and bronze Valor Awards, so all on varying levels of what someone's done in the performance of their job. And so it's generally involves, did they put themselves at great personal risk to save someone? But it's more than just that physical risk that they put themselves in. We're also looking for the judgment that they exercise. And you and I know, have talked about this before, you know, that police and firefighters, they exercise judgment in how they react to a situation because how they react can either calm a situation down or make it worse. And so we're looking also at those people who just displayed excellent judgment in how they dealt with a situation.
That's great. Now, does that come from when they make these nominations? They're nominated with a kind of the bio of the situation or what they feel like is the relevant facts about the person. And then how are the people... is there a committee that decides then who gets the awards or how are the awards decided? Or is that top secret?
It is not top secret. We do get nominations from the police, fire, sheriff, and KU. And they come from their respective departments. And so they do give us a brief biography of what happened. And then they explain why what the person did is worthy of an award.
Okay.
And I know last year when we sat in the selection committee, we were all just completely blown away by the stories of heroism of the things some of these people did. And we have representatives on the committee that does the selection. We have representatives from police, fire, KU Public Safety, but they don't work there anymore. They're sort of independent experts for us. And they're a great balance for us because we're all sitting there thinking, oh my gosh, what you did was so heroic. Give everybody a gold medal. And we have other people sitting there saying, yeah, it was really good, but a lot of what they're doing here is doing their job. And so that's what we don't always recognize is they do this every day.
So in these awards, you're looking for some for people that are doing their job, but go and take another go to another level from
Absolutely.
What their job is.
They're doing things that go beyond the scope of what you would expect them to do every day. And frankly, you expect a lot of them every time they go out on a call and every time they respond to something. So we will have a selection committee. We have an advisory board for the Valor Awards, and that advisory board is looking at who makes up the selection committee this year. And we're looking at people in the community to do that, business owners and other people in the community to be a part of that selection committee. And they will do that and select them. Last year, it was our members of the business community. Our business community profits greatly from the support of our first responders. So it basically is the community, but not the community at large, but members of our community who select the honorees.
That's great. Now, do you have like a number that you guys are going for? Is it just kind of based on what nominations you get? You don't really have like, oh, we're going to give out 5 awards this year or 10 awards. Or is it kind of a flexible number?
We do not have a quota of awards that we look to give out. Last year we gave out 14, but it was the first year of the program. And since we'd never had the program before, we made a conscious decision that said you could go back more than 1 year to recognize situations that had occurred. This year, it's basically from the time of last year's awards through the end of August for people to be able to nominate for activities then.
It's a bit a little more timely.
Yes.
But some of these things that people were awarded for last year were pretty amazing, you know, the kind of the heroism and just, you know, the rescuing that they did. And some, what also amazed me when you were talking about that is just sometimes, unless you're personally affected when we have a fire or a dangerous situation, we don't realize how many lives are affected from the people in the situation that are being helped to the rescuers. You kind of forget how scary these things are.
And you do. And very often the first responders in our community are completely invisible to you. We sort of, we're used to seeing them. We kind of take them for granted. We move to our right when we hear a siren, but we don't really think about what they're going off to respond to. And when the rest of us are running away, they're running toward it. And that's something they do every single day that we don't necessarily think about. And you know, they're here basically to protect us. And we sometimes look at police and the sheriff's department as enforcement. And they're really not just enforcement. They're also about protecting people and helping people. And they do an excellent job of that in this community.
And that was one of the things we were talking about before the show, is that you were talking about the chief was saying this. What he really likes about this is that it allows to kind of celebrate the other aspect of and one of their key aspects of their job, of the police department's job, to protect people. They aren't just the ticket people.
Right. And I, you know, sometimes when a policeman shows up, your first reaction is, oh my gosh, what have I done wrong? Certainly, usually my first reaction. But, you know, the Lawrence Police Department and the Douglas County Sheriff's Office do a great job of just trying to reach out to the community and do things to provide people with information that helps them protect themselves. And they really are out there. Sometimes they'll stop you just to say, you know, this isn't safe. You might want to stop doing this. And they really are part of protection. They're not just enforcement.
Well, one of the things, just on the side, that they also do, I know that they do a lot of safety programs, the schools, the different departments. They have the bike safety thing, which my son participates in every year, where they get the new helmets and things. I think those outreach things are really great for our community that they do.
They are.
Now, how do you fund the Valor Awards, though? Because you give out scholarships. Where does this money come for the scholarships?
It's all through charitable contributions to the Valor program, and we have a number of sponsors for the Valor program who contribute money to make the program possible for us. We also had a golf tournament earlier this year, and all of the proceeds from the golf tournament, all of the money that we get from our sponsors, goes into a fund for Valor to fund the scholarships for people. Our other major way that we raise money for this is through the recognition lunch for the awards ceremony, which is going to be October 16th. And that is an event that's open to the public and really a good opportunity to show your support for our local first responders and help us reward their families and acknowledge the sacrifice that their families make.
Now that's on October 16th. We have a website here. It's LawrenceKansasValorAwards.org, where people can go there and learn more about the Valor Awards. They can see the information about last year, all the people that received the award last year, and buy tickets. Can they buy tickets there too? Or get information to buy tickets?
Right. They can do that. They can also go to the Lawrence Chamber of Commerce site and link to Valor
LawrenceChamber.com.
LawrenceChamber.com. And get information there and purchase tickets. And that event will be October 16th, beginning at 11:30 in the morning. And it's at the Lead Center this year.
Oh, Lead Center. Oh, that's a nice place.
It's a great venue for it. We're very excited to be there.
So is it a luncheon?
It is a luncheon.
It's going to be a program and a luncheon.
Yes. Cool. So the way it will work is that at 11:30, the luncheon begins. We have a keynote speaker this year. It's astronaut Jim Riley, who's also an honorary U.S. Marshal. And then we present the awards to all of the honorees. And last year, it was such a great experience to be at that lunch and to watch these people, to watch the honorees. And they had their families there. They had their parents and their children there with them. And they were just so excited and so proud when their family member was recognized for their act of heroism. And so it's a real feel-good event to come. Mm-hmm. It's $35 for the public to attend, and it is open to the public. And children under 10 are free. So I think it's just a nice way to come and see another side of our first responder community.
So it makes it a family event. Then you can take your kids to it to kind of see people being heroic, that have done heroic things. Now, when you're talking about, let's talk about your speaker. This is a little good. Last year I went to the luncheon, and I really liked it. You're right. It was great. It just made me very proud of all of our first responders. But I honestly don't remember anybody speaking. Oh, I apologize. But this is a little bit different. You're bringing in somebody from outside to speak I know last year's speaker was good, but I'm just trying. This is kind of different. This is kind of a special speaker.
It is. And last year we had a speaker who'd been the former head of the Kansas Bureau of Investigation and is well known in that community. But this is a little bit different. I'm hoping that the public will be
a celebrity, right?
Yeah, and I hope the public will be excited about it. And it frankly combines, you know, my two passions between NASA and the space program and the public safety awards for Valor. But Jim Riley is a former shuttle astronaut who flew three missions in space, but what makes him kind of unique for this is he's only the eighth person ever to be named an honorary U.S. Marshal. And he's got a passion for these people. Wow. So I think it'll be a really great time to have Jim there.
Now, I don't know if you know the answer to this, but how do you become an honorary U.S. Marshal?
Well, the Marshal Service chooses who they make an honorary Marshal. And Jim's story is a little bit unique. It's kind of funny because you think of astronauts as being very brave and they, you know, strap themselves into a vehicle that launches into space and you know, they're braver than I am. But in Jim's case, while he's flown in space three times, he actually had a little bit of a fear of public speaking.
Okay.
And so he had been working with someone to help him with that, and he went and spoke to a U.S. Marshals group. And he did very well, and they were really pleased with him, and they talked to him, and he said, you know, gosh, thank you so much because you guys really helped me get over this. And he started to build relationships with folks in the U.S. Marshal Service. And so he called them, and he said on his second mission into space in 2001, he would like to fly a Marshal's badge for the Marshal Service to pay tribute to them and everything that they do.
Oh, that's cool.
And so the U.S. Marshal Service said, that's great, but it's going to be your badge. And they made him an honorary U.S. Marshal. So he's been associated with them ever since and actually continues
story.
That.
That's a lot of fun. How fun. So he's going to be talking with us here. He'll be here on October 16th. And we'll come back and talk a little bit more with Eileen Holly after the break.
And this is the Lawrence Business Magazine show on the news and talk of Lawrence, 1320 KLWN. 924, continuing with the Lawrence Business Magazine show on 1320 KLWN once again, and Frame Herzog.
I'm here with Eileen Holly. She's the Vice President of Operations for Lawrence Chamber of Commerce and is working on the Valor Awards this year, as she did last year, setting them up. And we were talking about, you have a couple of sponsors. I think we should mention those, especially you said The NIC, I know, is your kind of your title sponsor, right?
NIC is the signature sponsor and co-founder of the program.
Right.
And they...
That's with Harry Harrington.
That's Harry Harrington.
That's right. And he, because he was a former marshal, I know he's very excited about this program.
Former police officer, now the CEO of NIC Inc., but has a couple of other... This is a true passion for him. And he has his Ride for Cops organization. And
that's right, his Ride for Cops.
That's the concern of police survivors, where he has a special motorcycle that he... his goal is to ride it in all 50 state capitals. And all the money he raises on those rides go to pay for the concerns of police survivors. So the widows or widowers or children of officers who have fallen in the line of duty. So it's a real passion for him, and he's the co-founder of this program. We do have a number of sponsors throughout the community, and we are grateful for every single one of them because they're the ones that make this possible. Our golf tournament, the sponsor for that was Miles Schneer at Crown Automotive, and Miles has done that for us both years now of this program, so we're very appreciative of his support as well.
Now, your golf tournament was in this last summer. Are you going to have that again this year? I know you don't know the dates, but is that an annual event now?
That's an annual event and one of our major fundraisers for the Valor Awards.
Now, when you're raising money for the Valor Awards, that goes to, because I know that one of the things about the Valor Awards, we say it's Chamber of Commerce, but it's actually going... The money actually goes to the Chamber of Commerce. You have a foundation, right?
Well, we actually have changed now, and we use the Douglas County Community Foundation. Oh, so okay. when we talk about how people can make donations, they can simply write a check, send it off to Douglas County Community Foundation for the Valor Public Safety Awards program, and we're running it through DCCF because they do such a great job of managing a lot of the charitable contributions in this community.
Yeah, it's great what they do. That's fascinating. Structure. I don't know if they have that in other communities, but the way they help just kind of all the small. We have so many 501c3s in our community.
Right.
Because people want to help. It's a really wonderful way.
And it was just a great option for us to take this program and have it be part of Douglas County Community Foundation so that it's very easy for people to make their donations just by working through DCCF.
That's great. Now, so people can donate, but I want to talk about last year's honorees. I still don't think you can talk enough about these people. There was a water rescue, which a lot of people got awarded for that. That was in 2009. But I keep hearing about the water rescue. But what happened that caused this kind of huge event to happen?
This was, fully half of our honorees last year came from that particular rescue. And it was a young boy was in the water near the Bowersock Dam. And he got caught under a log. And as you know, it kind of looks placid if you just look at that water, but it's really not. It's very fast moving. The surfaces there are very slick. The rocks are slick. The concrete is slick. And this young man got caught with one leg under a log. And we had, everybody was out there, police, fire, sheriff. Absolutely everyone was out there. We had officers out there tied to ropes, some of them not tied to ropes, going out and trying to hold this young man's head up above water.
Wow.
While the rescue took place. And in fact, one of our officers who was awarded for that last year was out there in that fast moving water, really treacherous footing, and he doesn't know how to swim. So the courage that takes to go do that. And so many people were involved at varying levels in that response to save and literally saved this young man's life, because he is alive and he's healthy and well today because of all of those people who risked their lives.
That's amazing. Wow. Yeah, it is actually. We go down the dam. I think it's a fun place to go down, but getting into the water is not a good idea.
It is not a good idea.
Do not do that. Now, there's also, you also had another one, a rescue at a school.
Yeah, and you send your kids off to school every day, and it's so different than when I went to high school. I was actually talking to one of the assistant principals at a local high school, and he was telling me about all of the cameras and things that they have at their high schools now, and I was thinking how much they didn't have that when I was going to high school. But in this instance, we had, the Lawrence Police Department has officers in the schools, and Myron Grady was walking through the cafeteria, and a young girl at the school was choking on something, and nobody realized it. And so he went up very calmly, didn't draw attention to himself or to her, and performed the Heimlich maneuver on her so that she was fine, and he did it in such a quiet way that you know what it's like to be in high school. This poor girl would have been so embarrassed at all the attention that really no one noticed it. She went on to her classes the rest of the day. And Myron simply went on his way and went to his next meeting. And it wasn't until later that they found out that he had just very calmly, in the course of his day, saved this girl's life.
Wow. You know, this is what I've always understood about Heimlich, as I said, if somebody can't speak, that's when you know they're really choking, because they can't, their passages, airways blocked, so they can't ask for help. So just being aware and being able to...
Right, and no one noticed that she was in trouble, other than this officer who performed a Heimlich and saved this girl's life.
That's great. Now, there's also one other one, I think. Well, there's a lot of incidents, but this one, there was during a rollover incident, a person in a sub-zero weather. That was kind of, that sounds really scary.
We had a really cold, icy winter a couple of winters ago.
I remember.
And in this particular one, a car, we believe because of the ice, had been in a one-car rollover accident, sub-zero temperatures, just a nasty, cold, icy day. And one of our Douglas County sheriffs was the first person to respond to that accident. He made the call to have Douglas County Fire Medical come out as well. But for quite a while, he was there by himself. And so the person in the car was actually suspended in his seatbelt upside down in this car, shattered glass, was bleeding.
Wow.
In a car that was leaking gas.
That sounds like a Bruce Willis movie or something.
It does, doesn't it? And you don't want to be in that movie.
No, you don't.
But the deputy in question, you know, he broke the glass to get into the car. He took off his jacket, took off, you know, his gun belt, and so that he could crawl into that car and suspend the victim so that he wasn't just hanging there from his seatbelt. Wow. Until the rescue crews could arrive and extricate him. And so he put himself at a lot of risk there with a car that's leaking fuel.
Wow, that's I'm very proud. That's wonderful. One of the things, when I was knew I was going to talk to you about this today, is I went on the Facebook page, the Lawrence Valor Awards Facebook page, and you have a quote there. It's, I don't know if you remember this or not. It's an Aristotle quote. It says, "You will never do anything in this world without courage. It is the greatest quality of the mind next to honor." I thought, that is a beautiful thing. I want to segue here. You're talking about Jim Riley, U.S. Marshal, Valor Awards, which are a wonderful thing for this community, recognize all these people that do make us safe and help and keep us safe. And NASA, you were at NASA, you were the, if I recall from the website, you were the Director of External Communications. So you've done a lot of work, and you have a degree in crisis communications, but you're now doing something with the state here too, which I think is interesting. What is that? I can't remember. It's really long.
Yeah, I actually am a member of the Kansas All Hazards Incident Management Team, and I should say I am really, really grateful to the chamber for allowing me to do this, because I have been deployed when we had some flooding in the summer, and then again I was deployed for some tornado response with the Kansas All Hazards Incident Management Team, and they allow me the time to go do that.
That's great. So you're working with first responders then all over the state in some ways.
We're actually in several different regions, and so I'm in the Northeast Kansas region of the IMT, as it's called. And really, these are all volunteers. These are all people who have day jobs. And so if there's an incident in the community, we went down to Harveyville after the Harveyville tornado.
Okay.
And when it becomes too much for a community to manage on their own, then they call in the IMT. And so we come in I do communications. And, you know, when you do communications for a living, you're not always sure you're contributing to the greater good. And this is a way I can use communications to really help a community when they're struggling. And so they bring in the incident management team, and we have people who coordinate the response and provide a lot of services and coordinate volunteers. I mean, it's just an amazing thing to look at is they had in Harveyville, they ended up bringing in two or three times the town's population in terms of volunteers. And that has to be coordinated.
Yes,
and there are people in the IMT whose job it is to coordinate that so that the volunteers are helpful rather than just adding to the confusion. And it's a tremendous amount of work that they do.
Now this is a new program. This just started, right? This is us.
The IMT actually has been around for a long time. My association with them is new since I've been here in Kansas, and it really that's an opportunity for me to do something where I feel like I can give back to the community, which, you know, ties into why I am such a fan of this Valor program, because it is our chance to say thank you.
It is pretty amazing. This program, though, too. Do you guys work with the National Guard and stuff? Is that when you're these? Because I always think of when you talk about, you know, an incident happening, you know, the National Guard goes in or state stuff, troopers go in. How do you, and you're working with all these different people,
There's an incident commander who runs the incident management team, and that incident commander will coordinate the efforts of all of those agencies that are there and responding. So that's how you make the decision of whether you implement having such a team mm-hmm. come in. If it's something you can handle on your own as a community, you probably don't need to have a consolidated command. But when you start bringing in the National Guard or other police forces mm-hmm. and other fire agencies or other counties to come help you because of some disaster that's hit your town, then you need somebody to manage that. And the incident commander does that. And then we all work under the incident commander doing a variety of tasks.
That's amazing. I grew up in a small town, Kinsley, Kansas, which is out very close to Greensburg. And I remember when that happened, it wasn't that the town didn't have resources to deal with stuff. It's just that all those in the disaster were gone. So they needed an incident management team and people to come in because they just didn't have any of the normal things to deal with the smaller disasters and smaller things that happened were just gone.
Right. And the state doesn't come in and take over. The mm-hmm. state comes in to help. So, you know, it's still your community. It's still the mayor still makes the decisions, mm-hmm. but the state's there to provide resources and to help people recover.
That's pretty cool. Now, when you're dealing with the crisis management, you also have taught a class in communications. And I was going to ask you this too, is when you're, because I think communications actually is very important and it is helping people, especially in the situations that you've been involved with. When you're talking about crisis situations, first of all, that just getting out the message, but now with all the social media and stuff, are you dealing with a lot of different factors than when you first started doing this?
Absolutely. I mean, it is the explosion of social media and cell phone cameras and everything else that's out there now makes it so hard for communications professionals to stay ahead of the story. You know, U.S. Airways has a tremendous communications group. They're very, very talented, but they weren't out the door of their office before pictures of their plane sitting in the Hudson right. were being broadcast everywhere. So it's very difficult. You can use social media. It's one of the tools that you use. I know when I was up working some of the river flooding issues, what we did, one of the first things we do is we go look for the Facebook groups that pop up where communities are talking to each other about what's going on. And we find all those social media outlets so that we can get in and correct bad information or put out information and let people know, yep, you're going to see some guys out there working near the levee. The levee is not in danger of breaching. Let me tell you what they're doing. And that kind of information can keep people calm. People want to know mm-hmm. what to do. They want, and so they just need to know, give them something that gives them some control over the situation. And you can really help people if you do that well during a crisis.
It's one of the things I used to be with just, you know, you listen to the TV, the radio, you get that message out. It was a much more controlled statement. Now, in some ways, it seems like you're controlling other people's statements as opposed to making your own statement and dealing with that end of it. You're now controlling all these kind of from very sound to kind of crazy people's statements.
Your goal is always, of course, to get your message out there. But with the speed of communications today, you are going to spend a lot of your time being rumor control. And mm-hmm. I mean, rumor control during any kind of crisis is important because it does get a little crazy out there and the stories really get going. And I mean, when I started in this business, you had 24 to 48 hours to respond. And if you did that, people thought, wow, that was awesome. You got out there so quickly. Now, if you're not out there in the first 2.5 minutes, you are going to be behind the story. And so the days of us saying, well, I'll tell you what, my CEO will be back in half an hour and, you know, he or she will get back to you are gone. You've got to mm-hmm. have people who are prepared to talk about a situation and do so in a thoughtful way.
So you need to have, your communication specialists need to be much more, instead of dealing, they have to be much more proactive.
Well, and pretty much everyone on your staff needs to know, everyone in your organization, because you don't know who's going to be there. Mm-hmm. Crisis never happens in the middle of the day when everyone's there. It tends to happen at 4 o'clock on a Friday as everybody has disappeared for the weekend. Mm-hmm. And so you have to recognize that you may not always be there to talk to it. And the thing I find that's really interesting about dealing with people when they're under stress, there's been some great research by a gentleman named Vincent Covello, that people lose up to 70% of their ability to comprehend information when they're under stress.
Wow.
So, yeah, and coming from an organization like NASA, and goodness knows we can confuse you, you know, on the best, because we love jargon. We loved our jargon, and we tend to talk about highly complex subjects. If you're talking to someone who's now functioning at about a sixth or seventh grade comprehension level, you have to tailor your message to their ability to comprehend. And that's an important thing for us to remember.
That it, because when you're dealing with crisis, you're not just dealing with general public, you're dealing with people that are actually in the middle of the crisis situation. So you're kind of almost have two messages just trying to get out at the same time.
Right. And a lot of crises are proximate. And so it doesn't have to be geographically proximate. It's the kind of thing, if you can imagine it happened to you, then I have to deal with you too. So there's just, it's so much more complex than it was when I first started. It's a subject that I love. And I think it is a time when if you're good at what you do, you can make a real difference.
Because there's a lot of crises.
There are a lot of crises. Yes, you know, we call a lot of things crises that probably aren't. But I'm of the school that if it sort of feels like one to you, you probably ought to treat it like one.
Yeah, because there are, and we can probably talk about many that have been mismanaged over the years. When that's what I think is the biggest concern, is that when you have a crisis that's been mismanaged by bad communication, it becomes so much worse.
Yes, you can always make it worse. I mean, that's one of the things I you know, would always tell when I was working down at NASA, I would tell my staff is, you know, believe me, you can make it worse if people try to be funny or they try to be flip or, you know, they somehow appear uncaring in a situation when they should care. If you have to express empathy and you have to mean it. I mean, yeah. if you're insincere, and the BP explosion, I think, is one of the classic examples of that. If you're not sincere in what you say, you lose all credibility and you just don't get it back.
Yeah. The first response, and people are watching, if you're, and I think it's funny, is like you're saying, if you have people are glib, when people are in a crisis situation, there's such a humor probably is more, less than 70% goes out the window.
Yeah, I know mine would be gone. So.
So we are going to, we're here with Eileen Hawley, Vice President for Operations for the Lawrence Chamber of Commerce, and we'll be back in a few minutes.
It is 9:41, and this is the News and Talk of Lawrence, 1320 KLWN. 9:46, 1320 KLWN. Let's continue with the Lawrence Business Magazine show. Once again, here's Ann Frame Herzog.
Thank you. I'm here with Eileen Hawley, Vice President of Operations for the Lawrence Chamber of Commerce. And we've been talking about, and as well as she's been talking to us about the Valor Awards and crisis communications, what they're actually uniquely tied together. But I just want to let our listeners know that the Lawrence Business Magazine is published quarterly and available at our local Hy-Vees, the Merck, and other convenient merchants around town. You can also find it at the Lawrence Chamber of Commerce offices downtown, right in the front door there. It's also available online at thelawrencebusinessmagazine.com. And online, you can find out who our next guests will be on the radio show. You can also submit questions and comments for our guests at questions at lawrencebusinessmagazine.com. And like us on Facebook, where you can find out updates and information on the radio show and magazine. We love to get your comments and questions, but in our efforts to encourage an open dialogue, we ask that you put your name on it. So we were here talking about crisis communications and dealing with kind of the issues of, you know, some one of the things as a all these first responders, they're always dealing with crisis on a regular basis. And as a regular person, we don't deal with crisis all the time. But all of a sudden, I was saying, what happens if all of a sudden you're in a crisis, but you think like, what kind of advice do you to give people to kind of just, how do you take a step back to deal with it?
And by the time,
or can you?
You need to. You absolutely need to. By the time you're in crisis, if you haven't prepared for it in advance, it's going to be harder for you to step back and take time. So almost 90% of what you need to do to be prepared when a crisis strikes, you can do in advance. Mm-hmm. And I really encourage people to think about how you do that, about how you have a crisis response plan and that you have the tactics in place. Who do you call? Who are your spokespersons? If you can't reach the first person, who's the second person? Who's your team? What equipment do you need? I mean, so there's a lot of things that you can do in advance that will make it easier for you, to the extent that any crisis is easy, when you have to respond. But you really have to develop your teams. And if you're a small company, that can be a challenge for you to do that, because there's only a couple of you who can respond. But you've got to have people who are out there talking with the media. And never forget your employees. No matter how big or small a company you have, you need to let your employees know what's going on. You need to let their families know what's going on, because that will reduce the stress in the organization tremendously. And And if I, as an employee, know what's going on, then I will tell my friends and family, and that will start to spread out in the community. So they can be your best ambassadors if you keep your employees informed.
That makes a lot of sense.
You know, leaders need to step back and take a look at the situation, and you need to monitor what the conversations that are going on out there. And I know when I used to try to convince organizations that they needed to participate in social media, back before everyone participated in social media, I would just tell them, you know, the conversation is going on. Your only choice is whether you want to be a part of it. People are already talking about you. You want to be there or not. And so you still need to be there and be present. So you want people who are focused on looking at what's happening in terms of social media. What are people saying about it? Can you go out and correct information? What are the media, what's the trend in what people are saying? But you need someone who is keeping that bigger picture and making sure that you're being compassionate and that you're taking care of the things you need to. One of the things that happens is you get a lot more visibility into everything you've ever done. And I mean, I worked at NASA for a long time, and particularly if you're a government agency or you're a highly regulated industry of any kind, whether you're the pipeline industry or radio or aircraft, you will get a lot of, let's call it help, from regulatory agencies. I mean, a lot of interest from them. So you have to be prepared for that. And so my thing is, you know, if you don't have a plan, start working on one now and find someone who can help you build one.
Well, now, when you were at NASA, you've told me a couple of things that you had to deal with, but one of the ones that must have been the hardest was when the shuttle that went down over Texas. I mean, I can't imagine how horrible just being on the front lines of that would have been, dealing with that. But what I found fascinating is that you said it wasn't just them; you were dealing with all those families. Because you're dealing with both we were dealing with a national level. You're dealing with such a personal level and people that you know. How do you step back? That's a loaded question.
It is. I have to say, I mean, part of that was because NASA was prepared. It had a contingency plan, and they implemented the contingency plan, and they knew what they wanted to do. And I used to tell my students when I would teach crisis communications, you need to stick with your messages. Your primary message, your primary vision for your organization doesn't change just because you're in crisis. And so we had three basic messages, and I knew them because they were inherent in our values as an organization. And so as soon as we knew what happened and we started talking to media and we started talking to our employees, we had three messages, and they were, we're going to find the crew and bring them home. We're going to find the problem and fix it. And then we're going to fly again safely. And those were inherent things in the NASA values and in the NASA culture. So they were easy messages in the sense that I knew what they were. Difficult messages to give because, again, yes, it was a tremendous national tragedy, but these people were our friends. And we've often said there was no community that was more prepared for or affected by shuttle accidents than the shuttle community itself.
Yeah, because I would think with the training and stuff, they're dealing with that every day. And the astronauts, just what they have to go through to become an astronaut, I mean, these are incredibly intelligent people around NASA, which one of the things that, you know, the space shuttle, as you know, Eileen's husband, if you don't know, is a former astronaut, and Steve Hawley, he flew 5 missions, correct?
He did, yes.
So you had firsthand knowledge of that kind of...
I've been on both sides of that equation. I was the voice of mission control for something like 40 missions, and so I was in Mission Control Center working launches and landings and during the shuttle, and then when Steve would fly, I would just be a spouse. And I'm a bit of an information junkie. I think it comes from being a communications person. So
I bet.
I would always insist that I had a walkie-talkie with me so that when 7.5 million pounds of shockwave hits you after a shuttle lifts off, you can't hear the speakers. And so you can't hear what people are saying.
Oh, wow.
So I would always stand there with a walkie-talkie just pressed up to my ear so that I could continue listening so that I would know what was going on while he was launching.
Oh, wow. That must be. But if one I've heard, and I've regret that I've never been able to see a shuttle launch because I hear they're just...
We should have met years sooner.
I know. But you just see that, and everybody has always said just that wave is just unbelievable, that as it hits you, it's just such a powerful experience.
I used to tell people that if we could get every single person in America to see one shuttle launch, NASA would never again have worried about
something. That would make a lot of sense because now we were talking earlier, the Endeavor, as we heard on the news here, they're flying that to California now.
Right. All of the shuttles are now museum pieces, which, you know, is just, I'm glad that people will have the opportunity to see them and get up close to them. And I hope that it will give people some inspiration to continue human exploration of space. We mm-hmm. still have the International Space Station, but we as a nation don't have the ability to launch Americans into space. We pay the Russians to fly mm-hmm. our people into space now. But Endeavor, I watched on NASA television, I watched it lift off from Florida on the back of the 747 yesterday, and my Facebook page was flooded yesterday because all of my friends are space geeks, and everybody was posting pictures of it mm-hmm. arriving in Houston. The nice thing is they are flying over a lot of the NASA centers. So today it left Houston this morning. It'll fly over White Sands Test Facility and then it's going to head over Tucson and then on its way into California.
And this is the last one, correct?
Yes,
this last one's going. So now there. Just one other thing about NASA. Now, they are supposedly still working. They still have an astronaut program because they're flying with.
Yes,
Russia,
absolutely.
Right? There's not a program. It's just not flying the space shuttle.
Right, and in fact, there's a new astronaut selection going on right now to choose the next class of astronauts. And so we are still flying humans in space. We are going to the International Space Station. We just mm-hmm. had a crew come home a couple of days ago after mm-hmm. 6 months in space, but. You know, this nation we have always been the leader in kind of human spaceflight, mm-hmm. and we're not that anymore. You could argue we're not that anymore. When you have to pay someone else to fly your people into space, you have to look at whose economy you're investing in.
Yeah, true. Now, somebody said that this might cause people to actually, that we might actually develop new space flight to Mars. Is that just talking? Is that actually something that people are thinking about?
There are programs. We have, of course, the robotic explorers on Mars, and that's mm-hmm. that's a fairly traditional model, is that you send robots first, people second,
mm-hmm.
And that's a smart way to do business, frankly. And we are looking at developing the next generation launch vehicle for humans to go to Mars, to go mm-hmm. to an asteroid. Right now, there's a lot of commercial companies, SpaceX, and a few others that are developing spacecraft that would go to low Earth orbit, which is where the space station is. But NASA is looking at how do you get people to asteroids? How do you get people beyond low Earth orbit? How do you get them to Mars? And those are the kinds of things I think mm-hmm. a government space program should do. They should do the big, bold things that only a government can do.
And from what I understand, and from just the initial space program, there's so many other benefits. It's just not only are we getting people in space, got people to the moon, the shuttle program, but just the technology and the things that we developed and the science that was used to do this program, what we've learned about space has
right.
become.
There are things we use every day. And in fact, NASA publishes a magazine every year called NASA Spinoffs. That talks about some of the technology that you use every day that you probably don't know came from the space program. And it's worth
not
looking
Tang.
At. Tang actually already existed, sadly enough. It just got famous because of NASA.
Most people don't have the people. Kids don't even know what Tang is. But I need to segue less, although I could probably talk about NASA, because I wanted to be an astronaut when I was a kid.
Took the wrong degree program.
Well, I have that whole, claustrophobic and motion sickness thing kind of ruled me out. However, so I'm not a hero, but we have some great heroes, and we're going to find out about them in our community, some of these people that have really our first responders at the Valor Awards, which is going to be on October 16th at the Leeds Center. You can get tickets there for $35 a piece for adults. Children are free, so it's a great experience for kids to see how of our community has really responded.
Absolutely. I just can't say enough nice things about the Valor program. I think it is a very worthwhile thing for our community to support. I hope they will come out and support it. We've given $5,000 in scholarships to the honorees from last year, and everyone who wins this award, their children are eligible for that same stipend. So I really, it's such a great program. It's a unique program, and I hope the community will come out for it.
That's great. And we want to thank you. This has really been informative and interesting, and hopefully everybody does turn out to the Valor Awards. Everybody also just enjoy, look for them, and thank our first responders. I think we should learn to thank our policemen and our firefighters and our sheriff's department when we see them. I think they do a great job in our town. Our listeners can get links to the Chamber site. If they can't go to Chamber,
LawrenceChamber.com,
they can go there. They can get links to the Valor Awards. They can also like us on Facebook for updates. Each Thursday at 9 a.m., we have in-depth conversations to follow up and explore the people and businesses making a positive impact on Lawrence. Thank you for joining us, Lawrence Business Magazine, every Thursday morning here on KLWN. 1320, Redefining the Concept of Business.